Welcome, everyone. Good afternoon from Brussels, and thank you for joining the conversation today entitled Decoding the EU's COP29 Negotiating Position. My name is James Trinder. I'm the International Climate Policy Coordinator at Climate Action Network Europe. I'm going to kick off with a little bit of basic background on COP29. So, with the European Council and the European Parliament setting their positions for COP29 in Baku, Can Europe is here to give you the inside track on what decisions are likely to be on the table and where we hope the critical landing zones might be on key issues dividing the parties at this pivotal climate summit. As we look ahead to the negotiations beginning on November 11th in Azerbaijan, our goal today is to give you a clear view of what we believe must be achieved. The Finance COP, as it's being branded, is a defining moment to secure transformative climate finance, a fundamental shift in public funding to not only phase out fossil fuels and dreadful fossil fuel subsidies, but also build a 100% renewable energy future. If successful, this finance surge could help countries not only mitigate climate impacts, but also share the benefits of a more stable, equitable, and resilient world. So, for this very timely discussion, I'm happy to be joined by three experts. We have here Can Europe's director, Chiara Martinelli, Emily Runberg, who is Can Europe's Climate and Development Policy Coordinator, and finally, Lorelei Limiting, who is the Senior Energy and Climate Campaigner at Greenpeace Europe's unit. So, thank you very much for joining us. Before we jump in, if you have any questions while we are talking, please tweet them to @CanEurope throughout the session. We have about 30 minutes for this discussion, so we're aiming to take a few questions at the end. So, without further ado, the first question goes to you, Amelia. Could you please tell us about what the new collective quantified goal is? Why are we and the European Parliament calling for a $1 trillion public climate money? And how does this compare to the European Union's level of ambition? Yes, we can.
The question. So indeed, now we're in a situation where parties to the UNFCCC, the Climate Convention, are to decide on a new goal for climate finance from developed to developing countries. So the previous goal that was set in 2009 said that developed countries should mobilize finance to developing countries, $100 billion per year from 2020 to 2025. So this goal is to be updated now. Parties' views on many aspects of this new goal are still wide apart, which is very worrying. With only less than 2 weeks to go to COP29, we are still in a situation where we know very little, in fact, about the position of also some of the developed countries' position, like the EU. What we do know, as you mentioned, we have the EU negotiation mandate from the EU Ministers of Finance, the ECOFIN Council conclusions. We also have the EU Environment Ministers. COP29 conclusions that lay out the EU's position on this new finance goal. But there are still many, many questions that are open. For example, the EU has not. So, how big this new goal should be. No numbers have been put forward by the EU, although technical negotiations have been going on for years. The EU is referring to limited fiscal space in the Union, but however, we know that this, of course, is much worse in developing countries that are and will be hit by climate change impacts, and thereby will be paying the bill in any case. If there isn't enough global support. Also, we know that the EU stresses what they call a layered approach to this new goal, meaning that it would be made up of what they call a core goal plus an investment goal. And what this means in practice is still a little bit unclear, but it is worrying us, as civil society in the EU, as well as civil society across the globe. Our concerns relate very much to this idea that developed countries have on relying on the private sector and private finance to respond to the mounting finance needs in resource-poor countries and regions. The problem with private finance is that it's often very ill-suited, especially to adaptation and loss and damage needs. There isn't enough private flows overall. Also, during these past years, that the expectation of developed countries have been that there would have been more private flows coming to the rescue, but that has simply not happened. And especially the debt crisis in many developing countries now, I mean, it's the worst crisis we've seen since records began. There's limited fiscal space, high cost of capital, and in such environments, adding more debt and debt distress via new loans coming in the form of climate finance would not be helpful at all. In fact, they could just, worsen climate impacts in these countries, as countries would be, for example, turning to exploiting their natural resources to keep up with their debt payments. So this is why we, as Can Europe and Can International, have been calling for this new goal to be delivered in grants and in public finance. We're calling for $1 trillion annually to cover adaptation, mitigation, and loss and damage needs in developing countries. And we're very happy to see that the EU citizens and parliamentarians also have echoed this call in the EU Parliament COP29 resolution that was voted in the Envi Council some time ago. It's still going to be voted in the plenary, but we do hope and expect that the current amendments there will go through. So we see that the Parliament is calling for a needs and science-based approach to the quantum. And we also, as civil society, we call for this money to be strictly within the legal framework of the convention. So coming from developed countries to developing countries, the EU is in their conclusions, the official EU negotiation mandate is blurring these private flows, but also speaking about domestic flows in developing countries, which is worrying, which is why we really stress that when we talk about international climate finance, it needs to be financed from the rich to the poorer countries, from developed to developing countries. And it needs to cover all types of needs. We know that the EU is reluctant to include sub-goals for these three pillars of climate action, adaptation, mitigation, and loss and damage. And we think it's really important that these these sub-goals are included in the new goal. Happy to answer any questions. That was just a brief overview of the EU's position and what we're calling for.
So it seems we're experiencing some technical problems this afternoon. Our moderator for the day seems to be not connected to the call anymore. So I might just pass over to you for a second, Chiara, So give us a little bit of an insight about where the EU sits in all of this, and maybe help kind of give us a peek behind the curtain of what you expect EU's positioning will be in Baku in less than 2 weeks' time.
Sure, thanks, Thomas. So building on what Emilia just shared, also on the context of the climate finance bank of the EU negotiations, I would say that while observing and engaging with the European decision makers in the last days, European decision makers are getting prepared. I think we need to highlight that. And we need, first of all, to acknowledge that this year's COP preparation is a little bit different in the Brussels bubble. As indeed, most of the attention of the bubble is within our continent borders and with little attention on what's happening and what are the expectations from the other continent. And also with the upcoming hearings of the Commission as designate, starting actually next week and overlapping with the kickoff of the COP in Baku. Nevertheless, we keep reminding the EU officials that there is no option for deprioritizing COP29, and that the whole world is looking at the EU leadership to ensure we move forward on the Paris Agreement implementation. We hear a lot of attention is already towards COP30, but the EU negotiators knows very well that the only way with some progress at COP29, COP30 could be delivered as well. If we look at the Environmental Council conclusion that provide a mandate for the EU and in its negotiating role, and to build and not repeat what Emilia already said, I will say there are a couple of points we would like the EU to keep in mind when now moving to this special moment a few days before traveling to Baku. I will summarize these 3 points around the 3 words: emergency, partnership, and coherence. First of all, the emergency the whole planet is facing should remain central. And sometimes we feel that this emergency is lacking a little bit of attention across the different EU documents. And unfortunately, we speak today with yet again new devastating images of the impacts of climate change also in Europe. I think everybody saw this morning like the news from the floods in Valencia in Spain. But also last week, we got again scientific evidence of the scale of the challenge ahead of us with the publication of the Emission Gaps Report. So without going into details, and happy to answer 2 additional questions on this regard, I think what we wanted to highlight towards the EU negotiators is that again and again, we are facing a collective action problem. And the historical emitters, including the EU, must move first, bold and fast. Otherwise, as the Emission Gaps Report is showing us, we are heading towards a 2.1 degree increase in global temperatures, and we are not keeping track with the Paris Agreement objectives. The second point is about partnership and leadership. We expect the EU, we always say, to be a bridge builder, a guardian of all principles and pillars of the Paris Agreement, and to be a first mover. This call comes, yes, from the principle of historical responsibility, but also it is a wake-up call for the EU, especially in the current geopolitical context, including with the elections in the US coming up. We wanted to highlight the precious role the EU has to build and provoke new dynamics around the negotiating table. It should be seen by the EU negotiator actually as a privileged position, a position to shape the next steps towards a full implementation of the Paris Agreement, but also a position of simply being on the right side of history. A couple of concrete examples of when we say what does it mean being a bridge builder in the context of the UNFCCC negotiations. I have 2 examples. The first one is more in relation to the overall ambition. It's very good to see in the Environmental Council a clear EU acknowledgement of the critical opportunities and co-benefit that ambitious climate actions brings for people, planet, and global economy. So to see this interconnectedness. But to activate those benefits, acceleration of climate action is needed, and the EU needs clear signals domestically and internationally to resist backsliding and sharply counter climate denier that unfortunately are still around. And concretely, a concrete way to make that happen is definitely championing in Baku some messages ensuring NDCs reflect both high ambition in line with 1.5 pathway, but also reflect equity, the equity needed to meet the human development needs of the Global South. Another very concrete way for the EU to be a build bridger, and that we are putting pressure on the EU in these days, is for the EU to strategize and reactivate the High Ambition Coalition. For the ones that don't know, the High Ambition Coalition is an informal group of parties, including the EU and several European member states, but also Pacific Islands, some developing countries across the globe. This High Ambition Coalition has been pivotal in some tricky moments in the last COPs to ensure implementation and to ensure like giving an ambition push to negotiation in very difficult moment. So we would like the EU to reactivate such a coalition and give a clear signal that together we are prepared to kick off a season of ambitions revised NDCs in the run-up to COP30. And maybe the last point is really about coherence and what I already mentioned at the beginning of my input. So the COP29 is for the EU a global exam for EU domestic climate and energy policy. And there is no space anymore for double counting of quick fixes, tricks between global commitment and EU domestic plans and goals. Especially if you look at the work the EU needs to do to prepare its own revised NDCs in 2025. The EU needs to bring to Baku a concrete indication of the next steps towards defining its next generation of climate targets. While the EU commitment to 1.5 aligned NDCs is clear on paper, it has yet to adjust its 2030 ambitions to align fully with this goal of the 1.5. So can Europe call on the EU to set a firm target for net zero by 2040 at the latest and prioritize actual emission reduction in its new NDCs? So yes, we do expect and we do hear that the European decision makers are preparing well for Baku, but we would like to see emergency partnership and coherence much clearly and concretely outlined in their action every day in the negotiation room.
Thank you, Chiara. For anyone who is listening in and joining us, please make sure you tweet any questions to @CanEurope, and we're going to turn to those shortly. I'm sorry if we've had some tech issues at the start, but hopefully all is clear now. And thank you very much, Chiara, for sharing that insight. I will turn now to Emilia, who's our CanEurope's Climate and Development Policy Coordinator. I think you've already spoken a little on the new collective quantified goal and why we and the European Parliament are calling for a trillion, $1 trillion US in as a new collective quantified goal. So how does this compare to the EU's level of ambition? And if you would also like to talk to us about some of the sources of finance that we anticipate that this could be secured from. Emilia, if you can hear me, I'll hand over to you now.
Thanks, James. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. Yes. So as I was saying earlier, we need to see a considerable ramp up of public grant-based climate finance from the EU towards developing countries. The question we have been addressing with EU officials throughout this year and before that is, of course, where is this money going to come from? How are we going to raise this money in a way that is also fair and sustainable? And as I mentioned, the EU decision makers talk about limited fiscal space in the EU, austerity and limited public funds. However, there are many options by which developed countries, including the EU, can raise a considerable public finance. By taxing the fossil fuel industry and other high emitting sectors, firstly, the EU could raise considerable public money. If we look at the potential that could, we're talking trillions across the developed world. We think it's very important that the sources must be fair and follow the polluter pays principle, and that also these kinds of new taxes on, for example, the fossil fuel industry and fossil fuels would not raise the cost for the poorest segment in society. So the fossil fuel industry definitely is one source, but also other high emitting sectors. Looking back at the year 2022, there were massive windfall profits following the energy crisis. Fossil fuel companies in the EU made record profits, and the EU's subsidies to fossil fuels soared as well. So redirecting these subsidies is another source, a potential source. We also have looked at other sources such as wealth taxes, financial transaction tax, etc. And we're actually seeing a considerable momentum now across CSOs and think tanks, academia across the world, publishing, I would say, new reports almost every day, if not every week, on this topic. So there's definitely huge potential there in raising the public finance, and by doing so, also leveling the playing field for green companies in these developed countries. So yes, this is definitely very important and a thing we will be pushing for in COP29.
Thanks, Amelia. That's really helpful. And I think looking at some of these different sectors, I know that we've been pushing hard for the European Union to get more actively engaged, for example, through the International Maritime Organization for a levy on shipping. We've also heard some positive noises about the EU exploring ways to ensure the aviation sector pays some levy of some kind. And fundamentally, this comes down to a key principle in climate policy and international climate law, which is the polluter pays principle. So it's really important for us to remember that, and in particularly when we're looking at the EU's fair shares, remembering the polluter pays principle and the historical emissions as well of the European Union is one of the many reasons that we look to the EU for climate leadership and as a role as a bridge builder in these negotiations. I'm just going to check to see if we have our third panelist able to connect at this point. Lorelei, are you able to hear us, or are you able to come off mute? Please let us know if you're able to come in. If not, we can continue on without you. But I'll just give you a minute in case you are able to hear us. Okay, not to worry. So Thomas, I think you may have a question or two that we can turn to if anyone else has come in from the space and sent any questions over to ATCAN Europe. It would be great to hear of those. And if not, I shall turn to, I'll perhaps turn back to Chiara for a final question on some of the kind of some of your recent meetings with European decision makers and high-ranking officials in Brussels. It would be great to hear what you're hearing from them on their understanding of the COP29. And I know you've spoken to us extensively about some of the finance needs and some of the other kind of landing areas that we expect. But what are you picking up from the decision, some of the conversations you've been having lately, Chiara, about the upcoming negotiations?
Thank you, James. Yes, I think as I was mentioning, I think what we hear in our engagement with the EU officials is a little bit of, I would say, a fatigue in getting well prepared and well advanced in order to be outstanding, I would say, and constructive in Baku. And that's why I think we already mentioned we are living in a special situation this year preparation, because all eyes are also within our borders, all eyes are around like the new setting up of the new college and the new commission. So actually what we also expect is, for instance, that Commissioner Hoekstra in his hearing, he will touch upon what the expectation and his commitment towards the international agenda will look like before traveling to Baku. I think another important point that we maybe didn't touch upon is definitely that what we hear and we welcome across the different European documents that have been mentioned in this Twitter space is the more and more the recognition that the era of fossil fuels is over. Though what I'm worried is that I hear that from EU negotiators and EU policymakers now since a couple of years, more and more clearly, but still we are missing internally, domestically, very clear deadlines for phasing out coal, gas and oil. So we really would like the EU negotiators going to Baku with the clear signal that these fossil fuels phase out dates for the EU will be clear and bold in the run-up to the preparation of the new revised NDC that is expected at the beginning of 2025. I think this is a crucial step that we need the EU to champion in order to be playing this role of first mover and bringing all other contributors and all other parties of the UNFCCC convention together on the road.
Thanks, Chiara. So we just have a minute to go, and I've seen one question through from the audience on Article 6 and where we expect that to land. So we know, for example, that the COP Azerbaijan presidency definitely want an outcome on Article 6. I think they perhaps see Article 6 as a potential landing ground and an area where they can secure some progress in these negotiations. But of course, that we know that doesn't mean that the outcome will be simple, and some of the key issues on Article 6.2 and 6.4 are around the transparency and equity of emissions offsets and emissions trading regimes. I think, unfortunately, we've now run to our time. So thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be concluding the Twitter space now. It's the second in our series of Twitter spaces on the discussions in the build-up to COP29. Please, thank you very much to our experts and thanks to all of you for joining us today. I hope that the clear message to take away is that the international climate finance needs are soaring. There's going to be some very interesting things to watch in terms of landing ground on the fossil fuel phase out on Article 6. And on making polluters pay, and much more besides to watch at COP29. This session has been recorded and will be available later on our website for anyone who wants to listen back. Thanks again, and have a good rest of your day.